Let's be honest. When was the last time a buyer walked into your office because they saw a listing in the window? eXp has built an 80,000-plus agent empire worldwide without a single shopfront. Yet a group like Sotheby's International opened 37 new offices last year, betting on the complete opposite. Whichever side you're on, this affects your next lease renewal. Today on EdgeCase, will the traditional real estate office survive the next 5 years?
If the office exists just to distribute information, it should die.
And AI apparently thinks we all sit behind desks with listings in the window. That's ignorance with confidence.
Let the games begin.
You're misrepresenting my blog post. That's not what blog post is saying at all.
How many homes have you sold?
Zero.
How many consumers have come in off the street?
I can answer zero to all of your questions.
But think more of Jeff as a smiling assassin, a man who is trying to win your heart with his slick Silicon Valley grin.
Peter, you picked the topic. Were you actually trying to set a trap of some kind?
At the end of this, I might look like a rock star, or I'll probably look like a wanker. But, you know, I'm okay with that.
Welcome to another episode of EdgeCase, the Thought Leaders Experiment, where we take some of the industry's trickiest questions and unpack them through lively debate. I'm Samantha McLean, and today we're exploring whether the traditional real estate office will become extinct in the next 5 years. So remember, EdgeCase isn't about picking winners. It's about giving our guests room to argue positions with conviction, even if they don't personally agree with them, so that all of us can stress test ideas and challenge our own assumptions. So with that in mind, let's meet our two brilliant guests. First of all, Jeff Turner. Jeff is a serial real estate tech entrepreneur from the US. He's co-founded Real Satisfied with Australian partners, led it to acquisition. He now runs Tangilla, an association management platform. He's a Swanepoel Power 200 leader and Inman 101 honoree, and can I say, a fellow AI nerd. So Jeff, welcome to EdgeCase.
It is so good to be here.
At your age, it would be good to be anywhere, Jeff.
That's true.
Hang on, I haven't even introduced you. Pipe down.
I don't even know who he is. Why is he here?
Peter Brewer has spent more than 40 years in the property industry and doesn't look a day over fabulous. He spent a decade on the REIQ board, 8 of those as chair. He's an author. His memoir, Running Out of Saturdays, is about what really matters in business and life.
And it's brilliant, by the way.
I'll get the plug in now. If you haven't bought a copy, runningoutofsaturdays.com. No, it's actually probably peterbrewer.com.au.
Yeah.
But he's still one of my favorite unapologetic bullshit detectors. So, Peter, welcome to EdgeCase.
Samantha, it's an absolute pleasure for you to have me here. And can I just say, of all the introductions I've had, that is without question the most recent.
Thank you. I do pride myself on that. You mentioned that you're currently a man of leisure.
Yes.
And you've spent a fair bit of time over the last, you know, sort of couple of months watching the world go by on the beach. After decades in the thick of it, what's your next project in an industry that is just still changing rapidly that I know that you're still intensely involved in?
Yeah, I think, Sam, for me, I think if I can spend the next few years heckling Jeff, it's probably actually just maintaining a role I've held for probably the last 20 years. Anyway, I don't know, Sam, what am I going to do? My kids say to me, what are you going to do if you ever grow up? And my answer is, I don't ever think I'll grow up. I will continue to loiter around our profession. I'm stoked that the REIQ have asked me to educate in schools for poor students, but to educate in school.
We're not talking about children, are we? Because that would be disturbing. Yeah.
I've got a blue card. Yes. And what's fascinating about that for me, Sam, is that for those that have read the book will know that I spent the first 15 years of my life trying to get out of school, and here I am retiring, and now I've applied for a blue card to teach in schools. Wow. But I'm hoping that I've got a bit of wisdom that I can share, and I can empathise with some of the kids that don't want to be doctors and don't want to be lawyers and might be a bit lost on life's journey. You know, and maybe this crusty old fart that's been through the school of life can share with them and, you know, and maybe help them on their way. So that's kind of part of the plan. And I'm really excited about that.
I think they've picked the perfect guy for the job, actually. And I was going to say, in Running Out of Saturdays, I remember reading about how, you know, how much you loved school. And, you know, and I think it's brilliant now that that you're going back to school.
100%. Can't wait.
And, Jeff, you dropped a cheeky blog post ahead of recording this debate,
Cheeky?
Cheeky.
Well,
It was a concession speech. Well, I was going to say something about why traditional offices won't survive and why that's not a bad thing. Bold move. So what prompted you to put your thinking out there before we even hit record?
Well, I think sometimes these debates, and I think I mentioned this in the blog post, you know, force these false binaries, right? Is he going to do this the whole time?
Because
it's really distracting. Do you have the ability to turn off his video during this? Because with the mustache that he's got right now, it's impossible not to laugh at him. You know what I mean?
It's very John Newcomb with the Australian Open's on.
So. No, my brain's been a little bit on fire over the last few weeks. I'm preparing a whole new presentation that I'm going to deliver to the Texas Realtors Winter Conference. And it's caused me to step back and, you know, think a little bit more deeply about what I think the real issues are with AI. I mean, I'm like you, I use AI literally every single day. A lot of it for me is coding help with things that I'm working on. But it's in my life. It's not good. In fact, I'd be sad if it went away. There's so many efficiencies that come from it. I think there are other dangers. And so one of the dangers, and I'm trying to highlight that a little bit in this conversation as well, is that the definition that you put forth of a traditional real estate office, right? Which is, you know, glass storefront, listings in the window, desks in reception, transaction oriented. I think it should have already died. And so my contention is this: if the office exists just to distribute information, it should die. But if it exists to host trust, it should live. And my question is whether or not that kind of an office is the right kind of office.
Let the games begin. Today's topic, of course, we've mentioned it a few times, is that the traditional real estate office will become extinct in the next 5 years. Now, normally this is the part where we cut to a video of the topic selection process, but this episode obviously is special. We don't have one because getting these two in the same virtual room took a total of 37 emails across 3 continents over 2 months. There were time zone clashes, database meltdowns, and Peter was, and I quote, sitting by the beach watching the world go by, exactly, while Jeff was managing a couple of 100,000 users in the rush before Christmas. And Peter, you picked the topic. Were you actually trying to set a trap of some kind?
No, look, you know me, I'll just have a crack, you know. I mean, I might, at the end of this, I might look like a rock star or I'll probably look like a wanker, but, you know, I'm okay with that.
For everyone tuning in, we want you thinking too. Every Monday after we release an Edge Case episode, there's a poll in the brief, our daily newsletter, where you can weigh in. So as a reminder, quick reminder, here's how Edge Case works. Whether it works this way for these two or not, I have no idea. But we've got a few rounds coming up. First, opening statements, 90 seconds each. Question time, they get to question each other. Round 3, they'll share real examples and data, engage in a bit more verbal banter, I'm sure. And then my favorite bit, the truth reveal if there is one, all in the name of owning an Elite Agent Peace, Love and Real Estate t-shirt. So,
I cannot wait.
Can I use an hour just to go and rewrite whatever I'm talking about?
Yeah. Leave a comment below this video if you'd like one. I'm sure we could find a spare or two. Anyway, okay, you two, are you ready to challenge some assumptions? Jeff, you're arguing that the traditional real estate office will be extinct in 5 years. 90 seconds. Make us believers. Let's go.
So I'm going to tell 2 stories and then I'm going to make a quick point about it. I spent last January, a month in Buenos Aires, Argentina, with my development team. And every single day, multiple times a day, walking either to a coffee shop or to the gym or to the office, I passed 2 or 3 different real estate offices, all that fit exactly the description you're describing. At no time, any time, did I see any of them active. They were mostly empty, exactly as you described. Listings on the window, desks, you could see it, papers piled in the on the desk inside. That's Buenos Aires. Here in Santa Clarita, we took about 6 months and lived in an apartment and became newlyweds again. And we would walk to the Whole Foods and we'd walk to the grocery store. And on our way to any of these places, we also passed another example in a higher end area where the office sat empty, listings on the window. You could actually see into the cubicles. You could see the paper piled on desks. Again, at no time did I ever see any real life in any of those offices. And so my contention is this. AI is going to own the web. AI is going to own mediated spaces. Realtors need to own the real world spaces. Realtors need to own trust. And that's not how trust gets built. I think the offices aren't form fit for the way the world works today. And that's what I'm going to argue today.
Amazing. And so, Peter, what is your response to that? You've got 90 seconds too.
I guess the argument that, as we're talking, is will the traditional real estate office survive in 5 years? And my answer obviously is yes. But it's not for the reasons that you think, because the real threat to real estate offices isn't technology. It's misunderstanding. And today that misunderstanding starts with the definition. We were given a definition of a traditional real estate office generated by AI. Like, seriously, we can't make that up. So according to AI, a high street storefront, listings in the window, desks for agents, a reception area, a physical anchor for local transaction, the definition matters because it's completely wrong. And I don't think anyone watching, no real human who's ever worked a day in real estate would describe our profession that way. There are around 30,000 real estate offices in Australia, not 30,000 versions of the same shop front, 30,000 completely different businesses, from capital city offices with 50 staff to rural agencies where the principal is the top salesperson, the property manager, the receptionist, and almost always is the cleaner. Same license, same responsibility, wildly different reality. And AI apparently thinks we all sit behind desks with listings in the window. That's not insight. That's ignorance with confidence. Now, Jeff's argument is going to be that the AI-defined office is on borrowed time. And on that narrow point, I agree with him. I actually think he's right. If we're defending a stereotype, it absolutely should disappear. But that stereotype isn't the traditional real estate office. It's a caricature. It's a myth. It's a keyboard-commanded fantasy.
That is also a very strong opening argument. Now, because Jeff went first with his opening statement, you now, Peter, you get to ask Jeff questions. You get to quiz Jeff on his position. Quick questions, quick answers. Let's go.
You know, I love you, Jeff, but I'm just going to simply ask you a couple of questions.
Sure.
A few. How many homes have you sold?
Zero.
How many listing presentations have you done? How many
Zero.
Sales have you saved Zero. At the last minute in Zero. Person where there's been a shitty building inspection come in and you've used your humanity as a real estate professional to keep that transaction together? How Zero. Many consumers have come in off the street to talk to you about solving their woes?
I can answer zero to all of your questions. And my right. question to you is, in which of any of those cases did the real estate office save those things? It wasn't the office that did that. It was a human that did that. They probably did it in a coffee shop some of the time. They probably did it in a person's home some of the time. They probably did it in some place other than that office some of the time. Your argument, I don't even know what your question is.
Well, I think the question is, how do you go about, how do you take the position to suggest that the future for all of us in our profession is that we'll, according to your concession speech in the blog post that you published earlier, that we're all about to become baristas and social workers and local counselors.
Because you're misrepresenting my blog post.
For the last 20 years.
You're misrepresenting my blog post. That's not what my blog post is saying at all. The opportunity that exists, and again, nope, never sold a house in my life. Do I have a real estate license? Yes. Have I been a realtor? Yes. Why did I do it? Just to see if I could. But I am a consumer. I have bought and sold homes. I talk and deal with literally tens of thousands of realtors a year. So I'm not ignorant of what takes place in a real estate transaction. The definition does matter. If you want to start over with a completely new definition of what this office is, our debate will go a completely different direction. It's the reason why I asked for a definition. Now, if in your grand wisdom, at the moment you heard it, you had thought to yourself, oh, I disagree with that definition, would have been happy to change it. But that's not what we're here to debate. What we're here to debate is that definition of attritional office will be here in 5 years. Now, do I actually believe that all of those offices will be gone in 5 years? Of course not. That's silly. Most of them have 10, 15-year leases. They'll be doing something with them. My point here is that from a consumer perspective, think about where people are meeting on their first time that they meet. What are they doing? How do they hang out? What's the opportunity that exists for a progressive thinking real estate agently to think different about their presence in the community? What could they do differently than that traditional definition to change the nature of the relationship of the community with the office itself? This isn't about the humans. This is about humans operate in space. So I'm not arguing against space. I'm arguing against bad spaces.
And I think on that, we absolutely agree. You reference in your blog post, and we're going miles off track here, but in your concession speech that you published this morning, you mentioned Brad Nix's office in Atlanta, the Accru office. Yeah. And I think I was lucky enough to be there for that. And I became so excited at what it was, that it was this big communal space. It wasn't about shoving loans down people's throats. It was about bring the community in, a similar thing. Bill Rissa in Gilbert in Arizona, yeah, having an office that had 15 people come in, rock and roll. Unfortunately, what happens, and I think you alluded to it in the post, is that corporates tend to take over and we lose the communal feel. We just saw yesterday that the People First Bank.
I saw your comment on that post.
In regional Queensland is closing 17 branches. Because some corporate shiny ass sitting on a leather chair with a teak desk in Adelaide or Sydney decides it's a good thing. Get out there and get some shit on your shoes in the regions and understand what people are going through. And so we are going to agree on a lot of this, but I don't think that we can agree on a definition that all offices are the same.
I don't disagree with that. And you're right. We're gonna agree on more things that we disagree on. And I think in the spirit of how Samantha introduced this is that this is about pressure testing concepts. The concept that I really want to pressure test is this one. Why can't the real estate office be more of a hub for the community as opposed to an office for people who work as realtors? Why if you're going to spend money on space, why not take it one step further? Create an opportunity for someone to actually want to come to that space, whether it's putting a coffee shop in or it's a community, a co-working space where lots of different people from lots of different industries come in. There's a ton of different conceptual ideas that make that space more community and people focused, where trust can develop in a completely different environment.
Uh-huh. But I think the thing is that it shouldn't be breaking news to Australians that we're seeing that in good real estate businesses across Australia, where there is, you go to, and I'm going to go straight out of Australia here across to John Ross at Professionals in Hutt City in Wellington. 65 salespeople, leased out a coffee shop downstairs, has got a kindergarten operating inside the business, so his staff have got access to that.
So you do agree with me?
Absolutely. But I'm not going to take a generalization. Absolutely, I do. But I'm not going to take a generalization because there are offices that are absolutely streets ahead and going there, and are already there, and others that are on the way. But do I think the office, the days of the old traditional real estate office as defined, over? No, I don't think they are.
Interesting. Well, I was actually going to ask a question then, but I might leave it to the end. I will let, that was more than 2 minutes, by the way, but like I said, it's my show, so I'm just going to let things roll here for a bit. But Jeff, are there any questions you'd like to ask Peter about his opening statement?
You know, the funny thing is I don't think so, because his opening statement is really to change the definition that we came into the argument for.
No, it's to challenge the definition.
Well, I totally get it, but based on the definition, we actually do agree. You know, when I hear, and Peter, you can tell me if I'm misreading your last, I don't know, the last soliloquy felt like it was more than 2 minutes. Where you talked about there are already offices that are moving more towards the concept of a community space. You're not saying that you disagree with that as a concept. What you're really saying is I disagree with the definition of a traditional real estate office.
Because there are 30,000 different real estate offices across this country in all kinds of iterations. Sometimes they're a shopfront. Sometimes they're a ute an SUV with a sticker on the side that says Barry Jones Real Estate. You know, sometimes it's a coffee shop. So a traditional real estate office, you can't generalize a real estate office in Australia.
Right.
And that's why I don't think the traditional real estate office is doomed forever. I mean, you know, it would be very easy if I look at all the predictions we've had, and I'm, you know me, Jeff, I'm a nerd. I love yeah. tech stuff. But I also look at ARIC for the last, let's say, 25 years of ARIC, because I think we're on 25, 26 years. I'd love to do a where are they now for all the next big things or the game changers. Similarly, I'd love to go back to Inman in San Francisco or New York and say, where are they now? All the next big things, the game changers, for just the price of a cup of coffee a day, we can change your business.
Yeah.
It still comes back to the human side of our business. I think we're doing already, you know, inside our businesses. We are baristas. We are social workers.
We are counselors.
We are hostage negotiators.
I don't disagree with you. At a human level, I agree with you. What I'm saying is, this moment in technology, and I've been around this for as many years as you have, mainly on the technology space, not always in real estate technology, but since 2001, I've been in real estate technology. This just feels different to me. There's something innately different about AI's capability in establishing trust that has the potential to dismantle what has normally and always been 100% human dominated. And my preaching these days is to double down on all of the things that you ask me questions about, the experience, the relationships, the trust, the human elements of what's happening inside of this transaction. And I think one of the things that needs to be done is to rethink space. How do we create more opportunities for real human interaction? And how do we create a place inside of a community where the real estate office is not seen as just a real estate office? It's seen as an anchor for the community, as a part of the community, where you have an almost third space kind of feel to it. And I don't care what that looks like. We're both arguing against the traditional definition of real estate.
Let me take the talking stick back for a second. Just let me ask you one question. Have you guys got any data to back up your arguments? Because we'll scrap round three and I'll get on to my questions for both of you if you like.
Data?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't have data specific to real estate offices. I read an article either this morning or yesterday morning. My days merge together as I get infinitely older, as Peter is often willing to point out. Commercial redevelopment of commercial office spaces into housing is going to double in the United States in 2026.
Yeah, an article written by AI. Yep, next.
AI slops a human problem, by the way. But I just thought I'd get that one in there. But
can I just make one point?
What's that?
The one thing, and I think we're going to both agree on this, Jeff, is that what our profession isn't properly understanding is how much power now sits with the modern consumer with the knowledge they're now able to gain using AI. And our profession needs to step right up big time and embrace and understand that, because the new consumer is sitting there with so much information and empowered and looking at us going, you don't use this, you don't get this, you don't understand it. Buddy, you're not my agent. And I think we both agree significantly, you know, absolutely on that. Sorry, Stan.
Yeah, no. All right. So we're just gonna scrap round three. I mean, I like Jeff's data. That's nice. But you know, like I think I'm gonna take the questioning stick back here, because I have thought about this topic. This is a huge topic, and it does really depend on your definition of the topic. So I'm just gonna throw a couple of questions at you, and let's toss them around a bit. Peter,
yes.
Is there any part of you that worries that the traditional office, as defined, will survive longer than it should, not because it works, but because change is hard and people cling to what's familiar?
Oh, absolutely. People cling to the easy stuff, yeah. We hate change. We struggle with change. Samantha, in 2009, I first met Jeff at a NAR conference in San Diego, and it was inspired by this stuff. He ran a panel with some absolute superstars called Agent 2.0 and what it means. And it inspired, it changed my world. And I came back to Australia. I ran around on stages around Australia talking to real estate professionals about the importance of blogs and Facebook marketing and videos and great websites and lead generation, all these things that were super important back in 2007. And people looked and went, what's he smoking? What's he about? What a wanker. Okay. And so I spent 9 years running around trying to convince our profession to get their heads out of their asses, excuse the expression. At that stage, they were paying 20, 40, 50 bucks a month for all you can eat on realestate.com. And I said, if you don't start to embrace this stuff, the landscape will change significantly. And here we are today. I've got a person I do some business with over in the western suburbs of Brisbane who spends $500,000 a year with Big Red. Now, cool, they've done a great job. But the reason they're doing that is because our profession ignored it. And I still reckon, you know, I could go to maybe 15 out of 20 real estate agents' websites, and the latest news would be something from 3 years ago. The latest market information would be something from 3 years ago. We struggle with change. I gave up and went, go your hardest, Big Red and Big Green, because you earn it, you deserve it. Because we'll do nothing other than sit back and moan about some other bastard taking our market share when we won't get off our ass and do it ourselves. I'll stand away from my soapbox.
Well, here's a question for Jeff, because I think sometimes I speak fluent, Jeff. I do pride myself on that. I read all of your stuff and, you know, and I know you think deeply about it, but I feel like in your blog post today, your central point isn't anti-office, it's anti-bad office.
Yes.
So how did I do?
That is my contention. It's that it was one thing when the consumer could find all of the data online and find all the information online. There was so much of it. How does an uneducated consumer tie together all of these pieces of data in a way that makes sense? The ability to find the house, sure. The ability to understand whether I might like that neighborhood, sure. But all the other data absolutely required a human to come in and explain things, probably earlier in the process than they do today. I'm delivering a virtual presentation at the end of this month to a large home inspection company's conference. And one of the things that I did was, without any training, just use one of the standard large language models. I threw one of their home inspection reports into the model and said, tell me what my concerns should be and give me a way to argue for concessions with the selling agent. I did it in all three of the major engines, and I gave it back to them to let me understand whether or not it did a good job. And each one of them was within a couple hundred dollars on each estimate of each other. Each one of them wrote a letter that the vast majority, not the people who are listening to this podcast probably, because the people who are bad at this job don't listen to these podcasts and they don't attend conferences. And we have a very select audience of people that we're talking to right now. It was stellar without any RAG training. We're not talking about something specifically designed to analyze a home inspection report. And so the consumer now has this thing that it may already be developing a relationship with in conversations about its personal life, its kids. You know, my wife talks to ChatGPT about, you know, conversations she's had with the kids, trying to understand if she could have listened better or done something more, you know, more proactive in the conversation. When these relationships begin to develop, whether you view them as a real human or not, whether it becomes dysfunctional in its trust level, my contention is there isn't the disconnect anymore from the mounds of data. It's exactly what AI is good at. And because it's also good at talking to you in a way that sort of draws you into a trust cycle, we've got dangerous times ahead, and it's moving way faster than other technologies have moved. And I agree with, I went through my blog the other day and I deleted a couple of blog posts that had no comments and weren't attached to anything. But the other thing I did was I unlinked from some services that just don't exist anymore. You know, like they're just gone. There may be an AI bubble coming, but what's not coming is people stopping using AI. That is not going to happen.
I actually had a solo podcast a while ago about, you know, what to do with the AI-enabled consumer. And I think it was a little bit ahead of its time, but I think I might get it out and reshare it again. But the other question I wanted to put to you, well, put to you both actually, because this is the important thing if people are going to think about, you know, like what's actionable that I can take away from this. Is I think, you know, the bank example was pretty fascinating in your post, the bank that felt like a coffee shop. And there's been tons of real estate offices that have dabbled in this, like I'm going to have a coffee shop attached to my thing or a library or whatever it is. But you also noted at the time that bank failed operationally, even though the idea was right. So what does that tell you both about perhaps the gap between the insight and the actual execution? Like, what do we need to do to turn a bad office into a better one or a bad space into a better one or whatever? Peter, I'm going to let you go first because you're waving your hand around like a good, like a good student. Well, hands up.
It's one of the greatest educations, and it shouldn't have been a breaking news to me, but at the time. But if I go back, and I won't mention the brand, but I'll just go back maybe 20-odd years ago, I was involved with a particular brand where we didn't have, there was no evolution of the brand. It was a revolution of the brand. We took its branding from, you know, something pretty conservative that had been around for 20-odd years, and we revolutionized it. It was like people went, holy shit. And we, you know, 500-odd offices around Australia, changed the branding on every offices. They looked magnificent. But if you walked into the office in a particular western suburbs of Brisbane, if you were enticed in because it's a female-friendly brand and we wanted to get more females involved in the transaction, they were the decision makers, all the data, all the stuff we listened to for the marketing people, yeah, fantastic. If you walked into that office that was all pretty out in the western suburbs of Brisbane, there were still two old men sitting there behind a desk with an Astro saying, "I love, what the fuck do you want?" So, excuse the expression, I'm sure you can bleep that out, but what the hell do you want? And that said to me that the branding was spectacular. The change in culture and attitude and the right people in the right places to make that a great place to be was badly done. All we'd done is put lipstick on a pig. All we'd done is put lipstick on a pig. And so that, I think, is the problem, is that you can come in and roll out all kinds of national branding programs and all kinds of, we must do this, we must do that. But if you know, if you've got wankers or people that shouldn't be there or people that should be somewhere else or they're reticent to change or won't embrace, we've got to have that conversation, that walk to the car park where two people walk outside and only one comes back in. And would like to think that's the business owner.
The next step along from that is if you are a butthead and AI, I'm saying butthead because that's, you know, because AI amplifies what's there. Mm-hmm. If you're a butthead, AI is going to just amplify that.
Totally.
So again, what do we do? But what's the solution?
But that's tangential to what your actual question was. The question was, this idea that you read about in my blog post looked great, but it failed. It actually didn't fail. It helped them sell that bank. What happened was when that bank was bought, as with happens, I may never sell another company again because every time somebody buys one of my companies, they screw it up. What happened was the institution that bought it didn't fully understand it because it's hard to manage. And it wasn't just a coffee shop. That's the other thing you need to understand. There was a community conference space. There was an amphitheater inside. Every Friday and Saturday night, teens would gather in this place because it was a safe place for kids to go in the community. Like it became a true community hub. So its failure is more instructive and more along the lines of where Peter eventually got. And that is, if a great idea is taken over by idiots, it's not the idea that's bad. It's not the concept that's bad. It's that it needs to have a certain set of values in place to make it work. And that's the real question to me is whether or not the industry in mass can make the kinds of transitions necessary to battle against a piece of technology that is so good at luring you in to trust.
Jeff, you say that AI will own the web and humans need to own the room. And I think I agree with you on that. But do you think that most people in real estate are ready to hear that?
No, I don't. And it's part of the reason why, you know, I did a three-part series talking to a very convincing AI chatbot. I don't talk about the efficiencies of things. There's lots of people talking about efficiencies and prompting, and they're really good at it. You're really good at it. I'm focusing my conversation around this almost insidious ability for AI to mimic and to pattern match and to create an almost sycophantic relationship with someone. And at the same time, distill information in a way that's really easily understandable. You know, at any point in time, I do this when I'm listening to a podcast and I don't understand the concept. I don't want to do it because it'll make my phone go off. I tell my phone I want to have a chat, and it pulls up ChatGPT and I have a conversation. And when the definition I'm looking for doesn't suit me, I'll say, nope, explain it to me like I'm five. And it'll give me this brilliant analogy. Then I say, okay, take it up a notch. I understand that. Now let's bring it back. And it will be patient and encouraging and just continue on. We're not ready for that as humans. It's an awakening that needs to happen at a cellular level inside of real estate, that the domain that was exclusively human, you hear it at every conference. Peter, we've probably talked about it together at conferences. It's about relationships. It's about relationships. It's about relationships. Well, now we've got a technology that can establish a relationship. And the question in 2016, on a stage in Arizona, I ended 45 minutes into a presentation. I ended it with, how will you distinguish yourself from an AI chatbot? That was the wrong question. I didn't know how fast this would happen. The right question is, when and why will someone want to distinguish you from an AI chatbot? What reasons are you going to give them to turn to you as the human that will carry that torch? Because humans still want a trusted advisor in those big, important decisions. They are going to want that. Who's going to be the one? Who are the people who are going to have the skill sets necessary to detach them from this thing, this machine, this piece of math code that they now have trust in, to pull them into a wise, healthy human relationship where you can actually manage those tough conversations together.
I want to pick up that thread because I've said to a few people over the last 3 years at conferences, generally I end with something like, that people are looking for, they're still looking for the human in the transaction, but whether your customer trusts you or the AI is entirely in your hands. I'm not sure that's true now either, but you've got a lot of people in the real estate industry, and again, this is where I kind of want to get a little bit actionable here, there are a lot of people sort of sitting there thinking, well, I can get AI to organize my emails and I can get AI to do this or that. In your minds, you know, and even from a human hearing perspective, what should not be outsourced to the AI? Pete, I'll let you go first if you want to put your hand up again.
I'm going to need to defer because I didn't think about that. I think we run the risk of leaving too much to the AI, and hopefully this might make sense. Because Jeff, your question that you talked about in 2016, similarly, I stood on a stage in Washington and I asked 300 agents, hypothetical, I'd like you to come at 1 o'clock tomorrow and tell me why I should use you to sell my $1 million home. And I'd like you to come at 2 o'clock tomorrow and tell me why I should use you to sell my $1 million home. 6% fee, $60,000 on the table. What is your magnificent point of difference? What is your wow? What is special about you that's going to want to make me write a check? And I was embarrassed by the lack of responses of how well we could justify, how 300 people in that room could justify their fee. How well they could explain their magnificent point of difference. Mm. And then we fast forward to you in 2016 and similarly, and here we are today saying, how do we deliver the value so the consumer believes us and sees us as the professional instead of the AI? And that's coming at us at a million miles an hour. I go back again, it's like a history chart here, but we've got consumers in the US for some years that have been saying, we believe a Zillow guesstimate or Zestimate more than we believe the local real estate agent. Similarly here in Australia, now we're saying consumers saying, we believe what REA's prediction is for the price of our property rather than the bloke in the local market. But that's a problem.
Is that because real estate agents have outsourced the wrong things to technology?
I'll give you an example. I was sitting on stage. The person I was on stage with was giving the illustration of how he has an AI that he feeds the contract into. This platform does literally everything else. And he was very excited about it and explained how it, you know, put together the mapping and the plan and the timing, and it sent emails and it did communications and it did all of these things right up until the point where, you know, you go to the closing and do the thing. And I said, so let me get this straight. The least important part of this entire thing was giving it the contract, and that's your role. And you've outsourced every other thing in that transaction. Yes. Who's the robot? And so my contention is I've seen agents who are, you know, cloning their voices and doing everything in their power to try and actually clone themselves. And I get it. I get the coolness of it. And I just feel like that's the point at which you've got to stop and make certain that your presence is your presence, that your words are your words, that your wisdom is your wisdom. Peter's got, 70 years in the real estate industry, something like that?
75
years. And even better, if that person was doing that, like giving that advice in a kind of traditional real estate office, that could be around forever.
Ever. It could be. It literally could be. It would be better if it wasn't, though. If the entire surrounding was different, it would be better. But my point is this. The question you asked was, what shouldn't we do? We shouldn't outsource our voice. We shouldn't outsource our wisdom. We shouldn't outsource the one thing that separates us that'll never be there. It's present. you know, have I ever done a real estate transaction? No, but I've been a part of a real estate transaction as a result of a divorce. And I can tell you, having a human in that conversation makes it a hell of a lot easier because they can feel the tension in the room. They can feel the emotion in that room.
Like someone sitting in a traditional real estate office. Yeah.
Or great. Someone sitting in a non-traditional real estate office.
Well, now that we've circled back to the actual debate topic, that seems like a good place for me to say, what do you really believe, Peter? Will the traditional real estate office be extinct in 5 years' time?
I think there's going to be a home for it for a couple of reasons. The new generation aren't taken over straight away. There are relationships formed where some people will, you know, there will be some attrition, but we are seeing absolutely a changing of the guard, Samantha, of our all parts of our profession. In 2014, I started training for the REIQ in the license and registration course for new people coming into the profession. And we might see 3 buyer's agents do the course each year, maybe, and everyone looked at it a bit crazy. Buyer's agent, what do you do? And today, you know, I'm going to take a wild guess, it's probably closer to 50-50.
Where it's quite a change.
Selling agent is, we're also now seeing buyer's agents who are wanting to come in and saying, you guys, you know, it's fascinating. Mm. I talk to people that do the course and say, why are you doing it? And they say, because we had such a shit experience when we're buying or selling our own property. We thought, if that money is so good, do it ourselves and make a buck. Now, that might sound corny, but that is a conversation that's had time and time and time again. So I think absolutely the bells are ringing. There's a changing of the guard. I think Barry from Bangalore was probably going to start to disappear into the sunset sooner than he thought he was going to go. And I think, you know, Slick Trev with the Beamer and, you know, is probably going to start to come through if he's got some good training around proper customer relationships. There you go.
And Jeff, what do you really
I'm going to change one word. If Peter wants to take this as a concession, he can feel free to do that. At his age, he needs more wins.
I've already taken it as a concession.
He's already taken it. I think the traditional real estate office should disappear in the next 5 years. That's really actually my point. Will it? No. There'll be dinosaurs that'll hold on. There'll be some offices that are staffed by really, really good agents. And it won't matter, as Peter says, what those offices look like. Those will be few and far between. I think it should, not because space doesn't matter. I think space matters a lot, especially in the age of AI. But because bad space just, it doesn't deserve to exist. It doesn't deserve to exist. We need spaces that feel more human, not less human. That's my contention. The future of real estate isn't fewer offices, it's better offices.
I had written this most magnificent left jab, right hook, punch to take it into the canvas. And now you've gone ahead and spoiled it. It's bloody magnificent.
Is there anything else you'd like to add, Pete?
I want to use it.
Fair enough.
No, that's all I want to add. I'll just say this, just a word of caution. Some will call him Velvet Lips Turner. And Jeff is a wonderful debater. He does a lot of these. Some may say he's a mass debater. But don't be fooled by his dreamy eyes and his dulcet tone. He is the king of cool, the Swami of Silicon Valley, the guru of gigabytes, the Ayatollah of tech and coder. But think more of Jeff as a smiling assassin, a man who is trying to win your heart with his slick Silicon Valley grin. He's quietly eyeing
Silicon Valley
office as a perfect location for his next AI data center. Never forget that he wants to take over your market one purple brick at a time. Thank you.
ChatGPT write that for you? Because it feels like it.
All right. Well, Jeff, Peter, thank you very much for exploring both sides. This has been highly entertaining. And I guess we better end it there. For everyone at home, it's now your turn. Head to the brief on Monday and cast your vote. Will the traditional real estate office survive the next 5 years? If you want to use our definition, you can, or if you want to use your own, I'm just going to, you know, sort of throw my notes out here. But thank you again for joining us. If this made you think, if it challenged something you believed, please share it with someone who needs to hear it. This has been Edge Case. I'm Samantha McLean. And remember, progress always wins.